So we're just going to roll right into our next guest for tonight. And our next guest is, I just bring him on up here. Cosmo Catalano runs a blog, would you call it? All right, Cosmo runs a blog called cyclocosm.com. Where you can bring the beer up. In fact, if somebody wanted to buy me a beer and bring it up, they would not be discouraged. But Cosmo Catalano, ladies and gentlemen, from cyclocosm.com and the How the Race Was Won. You can grab a seat over there, or you can stand up, whatever you want to do.
Now that I'm blinded.
So how did this come about? Tell us what Cyclocosm is. What do you guys actually do over there?
If by you guys you mean me,
just you, huh?
No, it started as a cycling blog in 2005 when blogs were a cool new thing. This was slightly after Facebook but before Twitter, so there was still trying to figure out how to get information out. It was me complaining about bike racing coverage, and after a few years of complaining, I figured out a way to steal footage and make my own. So
what was your complaint, and what do you think that you do differently? What's the Cosmo flair that you add to it?
I think that my complaint is more that you watch SportsCenter, you get like if somebody sets a really good pick in basketball or makes a really good decision in baseball and who they're putting on the base path, like these things get highlighted in a sports reel. Whereas cycling, you see a crash, you see a pretty mountain view, and you see some guy crossing the finish line with his arms in the air. And cycling's actually really tactical if you do the spandex on the road kind. There's a lot of weird, kind of cool, very intellectual stuff going on, and I tried to present that, I guess, in these videos.
And so the videos, you do a series of videos called How the Race Was Won, and you do a video per major race, or...?
Production has fluctuated throughout the years. The format really works best for the races that are going on right now in the spring. But there have been years where I've basically gone every weekend through the whole season, February to, what is it in now? October? So, yeah.
But do you cover cross? Do you cover off season?
I have covered some cross races. I don't think I've gone through it with the same depth, but from a racing standpoint, personally, I really like cyclocross. I mean, I love road racing, don't get me wrong, but I also really love cyclocross. I've done it on cross races, both domestically and European races. Like, for the only races I've really had the rights to use the footage for have been US, I don't know if it's the old USGP or what, but some national level series gave a group called Behind the Barriers rights to use their footage, so.
So do you say rights? Now, what do you do with the European race? So, for example, last weekend's Paris-Roubaix, what does that footage consist of? Are you using pirate footage, or what are you doing?
I don't actually even know how it works. There's a site called Cycling Torrents where people...
Oh, that's how it works.
People in Europe, either they have a TV receiving card for their computer, or they just record what's on their screen, and then they compress it so it's only, like, 5 or 6 gigabytes, which is still a lot, and they put it on this site, and I download it from there, and start editing it, basically, cut it up, and highlight the cool stuff, and make some jokes, and hopefully people learn things.
Who here has you guys seen these videos? Have you guys everybody watched these guys? They're really great. They're really interesting videos. How did you get into cycling in the first place? Were you a fan first, and then a racer, or were you a racer first, and then a pro fan? What's the story? Kid, adult?
I really don't know exactly how to draw the line there. I was on the cross-country ski team in college, and all of the ski guys road biked in the spring.
Where was this?
At Dartmouth College in New Hampshire, so a pretty good ski team. Like, I never made varsity. But I had fun hanging out with the guys, and there was a big pile of abandoned bicycles behind A Lot, which is the student parking, which is practically in Vermont. And I got an old rusty, like, 12-speed Shimano 600 bike out of there and fixed it up and started riding with the guys and started racing the next spring and was instantly hooked. Like, it's great. You can ride really, really hard, and then you kind of sit back and draft someone else, and you recover, and then you try it again. There's a lot more opportunity for people who aren't maybe naturally the best to sneak away with a win, which is less the case in cross-country skiing, so...
That's actually kind of an interesting segue into, I think, discussion of Paris-Roubaix this year. We saw kind of something like that. We saw a five-man break with four names and who took it. So what do you see as emerging this? Do you see a trend emerging from the, is there a narrative story to the classics so far this year for you?
Yeah, there's definitely a transition going on. I mean, you've seen guys like Tom Bonin and Fabian Cancellara who've really dominated for years, and they look strong, they look good, but they're getting beat, and you know they're kind of getting old, and you're seeing new guys. Jasper Stuyven is a relatively young Belgian who rides for Trek, who won a smaller race, but still it was a big deal because like it was his first big win. And yeah, you had Matty Heyman, who's been racing these races. It's weird. Roubaix is a race where you'll see these guys like Heyman. They're not consistent top 10 finishers, except at Roubaix. Every couple of years, you'll see him like sixth or eighth. There was another guy, a Dutch rider named Bram Tankink, who always used to seem to sneak up there. You'd look at the results and see all these big names, and then this kind of like domestique, you're like, oh, how'd he get up there? And it's just a race where crazy things happen to the point that you can see something like you saw yesterday, where a well-known but not star rider can just hang in, have a little luck, and you know beat one of the greatest riders of all time in a sprint.
We keep hearing, I think, a lot about the Sagan era, where we've entered and I feel like we've been entering the Sagan era for about 3 years now, and then it always sputters, and he gets second all year after that. But with the World Championship, wearing the jersey this year and actually pulling off a monument win at the Tour of Flanders this year, what do you think? Are we looking at a real Sagan era? Is it going to be more fits and starts? Where's he going?
I'm more in the camp that we have, in fact, been in the Sagan era. I think a little bit too much was maybe made over the past few years of his inability to win a monument. There are 5 one-day races in cycling called monuments because they're old and long and very important. And he hadn't won any of them, but he had won pretty much everything else. He'd won Gent-Wevelgem, which is a very big one-day race. He'd won tour stages. He's won the green jersey. And it's... you know, it's cool to see him, I guess, get the monkey off his back, but he's always been an incredible rider. He's an incredible bike handler. If you Google his name, you'll find videos of him riding, you know, a road bike up the hood of a car over the windshield and into the bike rack on top, and then getting off and climbing in the back door of the car. He's made some public statements that maybe aren't the most politically correct things, but he's, as he's aged, sort of realized that, you know, maybe that wasn't the best thing to say, and he's really kind of changed from this l'enfant terrible, or however you say that in French, to being, you know, the top rider in the sport, and I think he's a pretty cool representative. He's definitely interesting to watch.
So we've seen we've seen the early warm-up tours and the week-long tours. I've started to kind of maybe tell us a little bit about what some of our Grand Tour contenders are looking like this year. What are your takeaways? Do you have any predictions or any thoughts about what the Grand Tours are going to look like for 2016?
I don't see a lot of new stuff there, as much as I hate to say it. The Tour de France really dominates cycling as the public perceives it, and there are a bunch of one-week stage races that are sort of practice for it. And, you see a lot of guys go there for training. They'll try to win if they can, but, you know, if their watts are where they want them to be and the team is riding well and everything feels good, they're not going to kill themselves going as hard as they can to win a race in June when the real trophy is, you know, in Paris in July. But there are some really good stage racers right now. Chris Froome is obviously up there, but again, you got guys like Vincenzo Nibali, who are like a guy who can win on top of the mountains and also win a cobbled stage at the Tour de France. You'll never see him at Roubaix, but he still has a very wide skill set.
This year we heard, of course, that the U.S. Pro Challenge, which was our local pro race, which Peter Sagan won in 2013, won our stage, that is, in 2013, is on at the very least, a hiatus. We don't actually know beyond that, but according to the promoters, it's on a hiatus, and they're hoping to be back next year. What's your takeaway from that? What do you attribute the failure of the race to, and what do you see for the future of that race and for American domestic racing, or American UCI racing, I guess?
I mean, I see that as kind of, I attribute that to economic reality. I mean, it's extremely expensive to produce 5 or 6 or 7 consecutive days of racing where you've got 2 helicopters and 5 motorcycles, and, you know, you've got to have a production truck taking this feed from all these various places and putting it together and sending it out to the world. And it's sort of that creeping Tour de France shadow. Like, everybody wants the Tour de France of California, the Tour de France of Colorado. There was a Tour de Trump back in the late 80s and early 90s that was based off the Tour de France. And I think especially with the roads out here in Colorado, this would be a great place for a one-day race that used all these forest roads, all these dirt roads. There's a race in Italy called Strada Bianca, which sounds like it's 80 years old and looks like it's 80 years old, and it just turned 10, and it's already become one of the biggest races on the calendar. And we could absolutely do that in Colorado with, you know, 1/8 the budget of the USA Pro Challenge. So,
what did you think of the racing of the couple of US Pro Challenges?
I thought it was interesting. I thought they got a lot of good aspects of Colorado riding in. In 2014, there was that, like, the half neutralization that kind of went on over the dirt road section.
Oh, and you had the rain.
It wasn't Gavin Mannion, was it, who was off the front?
It was Robin...
Robin Carpenter?
Robin Carpenter.
Yeah, yeah. And it was, I mean, it was the type of racing that... It wasn't unique to Colorado. You definitely see it sometimes in the Giro just because it's earlier in the year. But I thought it was really cool to kind of bring in situations you only get at that high altitude on those narrow roads. So it was a good representative for riding here. I think it just, like I said, it's so expensive that there's no way to produce it without a benefactor who wants to lose money.
Do you expect to see it back? Would you think that we'd see it in 2017 or done?
I don't know if 2017, but we had the Coors Classic, it became what, the Honey Stinger Classic. I mean, it's an idea that keeps popping up. I don't know if it's ever really going to be economically viable, maybe with drones instead of helicopters in some distant future. But
what do you think about that, actually? I think we're just seeing the very beginnings of that technology where we can do real-time on-bike cameras and maybe looking at drones in the foreseeable future. Do you think that's going to change the reality of how we walk? I thought the Paris-Roubaix coverage was some of the best that I'd ever seen. It was really, in addition to being a great race, I thought it was really great coverage. It was really engaging. Do you think we're going to go in that direction? You think the on-bike cameras are a real thing?
Yeah, I don't know that they are the savior that they're made out to be, but it's certainly something where you can... The cost has gone down to the point that there's basically no penalty to experimentation.
Right.
Try new things, put the... You know, as soon as you get crash footage, 30 seconds later, you can have it in a replay. Like, you watch the NFL, you see a guy from NFL Films who's seated on the 2-yard line, is not part of the production crew, but they still have his footage, and you get that beautiful, you know, 60 frame per second replay of the one-handed catch. And there are moments like that in bike racing, just nobody sees them. So,
did anybody have any questions for him while we got him up here? Anybody, any questions about pro racing or what we're looking at this season or what's going on? Porter, anything? Anybody?
I guess... I wonder, from somebody else that runs a website, is your site, is it a labor of love? Are you able to monetize it, or is it just something that you enjoy producing?
It has historically been a labor of love. I think by any reasonable billing standard, through return for, you know, time investment versus return, it is still a labor of love. But you know, I can pay my hosting fees. I can buy some beer. I can get new tires when I need new tires, a new chain, that sort of thing. It's not going to pay mortgage payments in the event that I do close on a house. So,
has it come close to that ever? Have you had anybody knocking on the door that wanted to make it big?
Not really. Cycling Tips, who are currently helping me put these together, and have actually been a great business partner. They were an Australian site. They just opened an office in Boulder. Yeah, I mean, I tried to convince them that it was a bad idea, but, I mean, they're just renting the space. They don't, you know, if they had to buy, it'd be a different story. The Cycling Tips has been really good about it, and, you know, it was kind of right on the cusp of livable wage, but it's not quite there. Like, I really want one of the broadcasters to kind of wake up to, you know, at least the mid-90s and say, hey, maybe we should do a little bit more than just taking the international feed from the ASO and having two old British guys talk over it. Let's see what we can do in terms of new content, in terms of getting actual money off the internet, in terms of getting people to pay money for things that are on the internet, that sort of stuff.
Any other thoughts or questions while we got Cosmo up here? Anything about pro racing at all? Okay, then thank you so much, Cosmo, for coming.
Thanks, Cosmo.
Everybody give him a hand. Thank you, Cosmo Catalano.